Welcome to episode 73 of the Draft Lab podcast. I'm your host, Josh Phillips, aka J2S Josh, and I'm once again joined by all-time 17 lands trophy leader, Classy Chris Palmiotti, aka Florida Mon. We're popping on a quick episode to talk about the mechanics of Phyrexia All Will Be One. How's it going today, Chris?
Not once in my life has someone called me classy, so I'm going to actually listen to the first 30 seconds of this podcast to hear that over and over again.
You're welcome.
It's going well. Been getting beat down by some snowmen and elves in Kaldheim recently, so that hasn't felt great. But you know what? I'm feeling pretty good about best of three.
Did you get trapped in Krampus?
I'm waiting for the alt art series of horror movie characters. Well, that would be sick. I would drop many gems for that.
My best friend did get me a shirt for Christmas. It said, "My neck, my back, my naughty children sack," with Krampus on it.
I've never seen Krampus. You told me I should watch it.
Oh, you should. It is fabulous. If you love to laugh at just completely ridiculously stupid things.
Yeah.
And Aunt Dorothy is my spirit animal.
I don't know what that reference is, but one day I will come back and understand that reference.
Okay. Weekly update. As we're recording, we have both the Decathlon finale and the Kaldheim Arena Open coming up. But considering the amount of things on my plate at the moment, you might be listening to this after those have been completed. Phyrexian slip. I mean, Freudian slip. Yeah, that's what I meant. Anyway, bounty-wise, we're still in a very sad world where no one has cracked a door off of Ramos Dragon Engine. Is that asking too much? We have fabulous prizes available. And no one has turned in the 5 Runer either. Come on, people. Get it done.
Get it done. Slackers.
Mm-hmm. We're going to just talk about this stuff because who wants to do a pack one, pick one at this point? Not I.
Yeah, what would we do? Brothers War, I think everyone's a little bit over that war.
They're done, bro.
Get some makeup, guys.
Mm-hmm. All right. First up, as I say to Chris all the time, don't you know that you're toxic? This is the definitely not infect of the set. In some ways, it's worse. Some ways, better. Whatever a creature with toxic deals damage to a player, that player gets a number of poison counters equal to toxicity of the creature. So if it has toxic 6, it doesn't care if it deals 1 or 20 to the player. They get 6 poison counters. That means it doesn't work as well with pump spells, but works better with trample. The good part about it is it still deals the actual damage to the opponent, so you're not sitting there poking away with an infect creature when your opponent's at 1 life. It doesn't perform as well in creature combat either, because it does normal damage instead of -1/-1 counters. And I may have gotten a little ahead of myself there, because for those non-dinosaur players who don't know what poison counters are, a player who gets 10 of them loses the game.
This is like a new spin on it, but for some reason it feels like an outdated mechanic, even though it's never really been. I've never really played sets with infect. But I'm aware of poison counters because it's kind of like popped up in random sets. Even in Kaldheim, right? You have Finn randomly that gives poison counters.
That definitely would have been a bounty if we had the podcast back then.
Right. I don't think it's very exciting. I mean, it's probably going to have some cool little mini games where you're just trying to poke away with like high toxic things when you can. You can proliferate poison counters. The proliferate's like a thing that's around in this set. So you can like proliferate your opponent's poison counters as a cool way to get the last one or two on there, I think. It's probably going to lead to some interesting approaches to games where you stop caring about damage and start caring about toxic. But I'm curious to see if there's like really dedicated toxic decks that will be viable.
The problem is at this point, while a lot of the rares have leaked, and I'm one of those people that looks at the leaks. I'm sorry, people. It's just who I am. I can't not look. But while we've had almost all the rares spoiled, we really haven't gotten a lot of commons and uncommons yet, so we're just kind of waiting for those to come out. So we don't really know what the decks are going to look like yet. I could see it being really powerful for a couple reasons. One is the next ability. Corrupted is both a new ability and what I love doing to people in bro drafts. It's basically blank text unless your opponent has 3 of those handy-dandy poison counters. Then that text magically appears on the card. It can be on a permanent or a spell. It's pretty simple and a nice reward for stinging in some early poison counters.
Yeah, the thing I'm relating it to is the Ascent of the City or whatever, right? As soon as you hit 10 permanents, you got that emblem in Ixalan.
The problem in that comparison, because that was something I immediately thought of too. I was like, hey, I don't have to reference this to some old mechanic that people aren't going to know what I'm talking about. I could just do this. But that emblem is there for good if your opponent doesn't have 3 poison counters, if they find a way to remove them, which we don't know if there are cards that do that yet in this set, but there are previous cards that could remove them.
Yeah. You cut me off. I was going to say that. It's cool because you don't have to have a dedicated toxic or poison deck or whatever, but you probably have some incentive in, I don't know, in every color in certain colors to throw some way to get 3 poison counters on your opponent, right? I think this is going to be, just from the mechanics that have been spoiled so far, they don't look extremely complex or out there on the surface, which usually makes me default to that this format has the potential to have very nuanced deck building, right? That's what these types of mechanics make me feel. It's all about like balancing. I need cards that actually do meaningful things and affect the board, but if my approach is to kill people by poison counters or have to make sure I get Corrupt turn on or else my cards are all garbage, you have to make deck building decisions potentially, which I think is good. It's kind of lame not to see. I'm not super excited by any one of these mechanics on the surface, but at the same time, I think the collection of these mechanics maybe point towards a set that has some nuance to it, but this is all speculation, of course. It's just my initial take.
You know, I feel like we should maybe talk about some of the rares at the end of this.
Sure, that works.
Just as you talk about nuance and stuff like that and having a nice set where you have to think things through, you know.
Oh, no. Oh, God. Don't tell me. I don't want to see them.
Oh, you're going to see them.
Okay, yes, sir.
All right, the next one, for Mirrodin. Did I get that excitement right? It's got that exclamation point, so maybe I should be slapping some more sauce on that.
It's kind of like these pretzels are making me thirsty. Everyone's going to have their own interpretation. For Mirrodin!
I think you got a little more into it than I did. It's an ability very similar to Living Weapon, but this one makes you a 2-2 red creature instead of a 0-0 germ. Especially with their recent Kaldheim flashbacks, we all know the equipment feels so much better when it comes equipped out with its own creature, because it really mitigates a lot of problems with equipment. The equipment just being there still after they kill the creature is just kind of a nice little bonus.
Yeah, and a 2-2 is nothing to sneeze at. If it's like some cool utility 2-2, or if the equipment pumps it to like a 4-4 or 3 or 4-3 or something, and you're only spending 3 or 4 mana, like you're not really paying a fee at that point. You're just, it's kind of upside. So I'm interested to see if equipment, once again, has some time in the sun and is relevant and not just some throwaway 2-off cards in the set.
One of the big things is that being a 2-2, instead of just using Living Weapon, is a way for them to put less powerful equipment out, because it has 2-2 of stats already on that creature, so it doesn't have to make the equipment as powerful when it's re-equipped.
Right, right. Sounds like they have the potential to be pretty strong on average if they have pretty good abilities or stat boosting effects, but again, we'll see. I do want to say I really hate this keyword or this mechanic for Mirrodin being like the name of the mechanic. For some reason, it bothers me a lot.
It gets to me, too, because it limits their ability to reuse it. Because you have to have it set in a plane that would have Mirrodin creatures on it, or specifically on New Phyrexia, which used to be Mirrodin. I know you don't know any of the lore, so.
No, I know nothing. But they could have done something generic, like Gear Up. You know, something. I don't like this lore in my mechanic title.
We'll workshop it.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll come up with a new name and call it that whenever we play it for the whole set.
That sounds good. That won't be confusing to anyone at all.
Not even a little. All right, the next one is Oil Counters. This is the flavor text of counters. They're similar to generic counters that do whatever the card says, except that there are other cards that care about things like the number of oil counters on your permanents or allow you to move them around.
Yeah, it's just kind of like this resource, right? It sounds like you can spend them, you can amass them, they do things.
Yeah,
it's kind of a wild card counter because it's all what they do is totally dependent on the cards associated with them. They have no inherent effect on their own. So it's hard to really make any judgment calls about this mechanic, right?
Right. Because it's cards that are like, comes into play with 4 oil counters, remove one to do this. But, you know, that could have just been counters.
Right. Yeah. They're just trying to get the thematic feeling to it. Oil is a weird thing to just have like in a counter unit, though, like just from a, I don't know, practical perspective. Feels like they should come in like some volume.
Is that a leader?
Yeah, right. Like, oh, yeah, yeah. Don't mind that. That's just my oil counter sitting around.
I'm just going to bring in like a whole case of oil and just put like a whole one on my card. Like every time I put an oil counter on it.
Right. Strange. It doesn't, I don't know, for some reason, it doesn't really line up in my mind's eye. But hey, it is what it is.
And then our old friend Proliferate has returned. That's basically when you proliferate, you can add an additional counter to anything that has a counter on it. That includes your opponent who might have some of those poison counters on them. Imagine being killed by a cantrip.
It's going to happen.
Oh, it's going to happen a lot.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. And then you get more oil counters too. So that's good.
Luckily, Arena has actually been pretty well programmed with proliferate because you can highlight your opponent's creatures, put extra counters on them too. But usually never want to do that. So usually it just shows up with just the positive ones pre-checked.
I wonder if it's going to default you to proliferating your opponent's poison counters. Like, if that will be clicked on.
It should be.
Right, because it's the assumption that'll be positive for you. But that'd be cool if there was a card that gave you a benefit. The more poison counters you have, the more of the benefit the card gives. So it's kind of like in video games, like, oh, when your health's low, you get a bonus to damage. Rewards you for playing on the edge a bit. I wonder if any of the cards are going to be in that space. Probably not, but that would be interesting since proliferate, you could proliferate your own poison counters onto yourself.
It sounds like something you'd put in commander cards, like in the commander decks.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
Like all of your creatures get +2/+2 if you have 5 counters.
Yeah, I was thinking for poison. Ooh, like, wow, you get a really big benefit if you get up to 9 poison counters.
Obviously, that's a little risky.
Anyway, my mind's wandering today. Sorry, everyone.
Oh, dude, it's all good. As we're talking about some nuance in this set, we do have some cards that we'd like to discuss.
Okay.
The first one is the Eternal Wanderer. So it is white 4. It is a planeswalker that comes with 5 loyalty. And no more than one creature can attack it each combat.
Come on.
Wait. We're not done yet, Chris.
Okay.
So for +1, you can exile up to 1 target artifact or creature, return that card to the battlefield under its owner's control at the beginning of that player's next end step. So that's either defensive by making their creature go away until their next end step, or allowing you to blink your own things for a benefit.
Sure.
That's pretty solid for +1. Because anything can protect itself on top of the fact that this already protects itself, so you can't go wide against it normally.
Right. You could take away their evasive threat or their big threat.
Yeah. So for 0, so just a neutral one, It makes a 2/2 white samurai with double strike.
That's pretty good.
Yep.
Also protects it pretty well.
There's an ultimate, though. Do you remember what I told you the starting loyalty of this thing was?
5, if I recall, yes.
The ultimate only costs 4.
Oh, that's good. That's good. This is going to be good. I'm sure it's something useless.
No. For each player, choose a creature that player controls. They sacrifice all creatures they control not chosen that way.
You get to choose?
Yes, you get to choose.
Oh my god, why would they do that? Why couldn't it just be like, each player keeps one creature? This is insane!
You ultimate the turn you play this, and keep your big chonker, and they get to keep their 1/1.
This is gonna be frustrating. And it's a rare? Wait a second!
You just saw that one too, huh?
It's not even mythic? Are you kidding me? Oh, okay. Forget everything I said in the front half of this podcast. This card alone is indicative of frustrations.
Well, there's some pretty good cards in the set that have been officially spoiled.
Okay.
Here's an uncommon. It is white and a colorless called Ossification. You enchant basic land you control, and when it enters the battlefield, exile target creature or planeswalker an opponent controls until it leaves the battlefield.
Dang. No one's blowing up your land, so this still just is basically enchantment removal is the only way to deal with this, I assume.
Yeah.
For 2 mana, exile anything. Jeez. No, creature or planeswalker. Sorry. Not anything, but
the relevant stuff.
Yeah, that's pretty good for an uncommon.
There's other ridiculous ones we're going by here really quick. White Sun's Twilight seems like a fun one. It's white X, and you create X 1/1 mites with toxic 1, and they can't block, but whatever. You're making X 1/1s with toxic. If X is 5 or more, you destroy all other creatures and then do that.
Oh man, already 2 potential board wipes in white. Yikes.
I haven't touched mythics yet either, mind you. I'm just going to not even talk about this white god creature here and just keep scrolling.
Okay, let's keep my sanity.
Yeah, control magic, whatever. We're used to that. You know what? This one's funny because blue X, gain control of target creature with mana value X or less. Okay, that's fine. We've had that card before. It's very good.
Mana value X or less. Okay, yeah.
But if X is 5 or more, you create a token that's a copy of that creature too.
And it's the best kind in the fact that it's a sorcery, not an enchantment. So you just get it and they can't blow it up. It's just like yours now.
Right.
Yeah. Wow. 7 mana. I wonder if getting to 7 mana is going to be a reasonable thing to do in this format. Because if so, there's going to be some haymakers already.
There are some cards. I mean, Phyrexian Obliterate is there, but it's 4 black. So it'll happen and you'll get upset when it happens, but it's hard to cast.
Yeah. I wonder how much, potential monocolor action there can be in this format.
Some of these you're just like, okay, this is good, but not like egregious. A 4/4 trample for green and 2 colorless with toxic, and it also proliferates whatever you deal damage to a player.
You're playing best of 1 and they're on the play and this is their turn 3 play. You're probably screwed unless you have that busted uncommon removal. Maybe the removal is just like super disgusting in this format, so all of these like powerful cards aren't as bad as they seem.
The white uncommon's really good.
If removal's busting the format, that means the removal of common would be the good removal, and we haven't seen that yet, so it could still be true.
How do you feel about a Phyrexian Dinosaur?
I saw this card. My brother sent it to me. It's pretty sweet. 4 green, 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 so 7 mana. Again, 7 mana. It's an 8/8, can't be countered, trample ward for 4 and haste, and then also toxic 4. I don't know if the toxic 4 is going to mean that much unless you already have toxic stuff going on, and then this just puts the nail in the coffin, so to speak, with one swing out of nowhere.
Well, it matters because of trample.
Yeah, but like if you're trampling through, don't get me wrong, the toxic is going to end up killing people pretty quickly when this card, but an 8/8 trample haste is also just going to subtract your life total into oblivion too, so... This is just like win in every way.
What if I told you there was a hexproof planeswalker?
I would tell you, get the heck out of here with that garbage.
Well, there is. It is also only a rare and not a mythic.
Oh, I found it. I scrolled down.
How do you feel about Kaya?
Let me read it. So it's 3 white, white, black, black. At least it's hard to cast. 7 mana, but, you know, double, double pip. Hexproof comes down with 6 loyalty plus 2. Okay. Each opponent loses 3 life. You gain 3 life. Not that exciting, but, you know, gets it up to 8 loyalty, which is pretty insane. For 0, you can draw 2 cards and each opponent may scry 1. Okay. It still seems like you're coming ahead in that exchange. And minus 3, the last ability, exile target creature enchantment. If it wasn't an aura, create a token that's a copy of it, except it's a 1/1 white spirit token fly. Oh my God. What is happening in this format? This seems like the most Prince format we've seen in a long while by like a mile.
They better come correct on these commons.
Yeah, right. Jeez. This is going to be like cube level stuff. Glissa Sunslayer. So it's 1 black, a green for a 3/3 first strike death touch legendary creature.
First strike and death touch?
For 3 mana. Yeah, it's like, okay.
You can't block it, right?
And then whenever it deals combat damage to a player, you could choose one. Oh, draw a card and lose 1 life, or destroy target enchantment, or move up to 3 counters from target permanent. So the last one's not so exciting.
It lets you hit them and still remove counters from a planeswalker.
Yeah, that's a good point. And that matters when they have a planeswalker that only lets you attack with one creature.
Indeed. I am ready to make my first prediction of the format.
Okay.
It will be a Prince format.
I can't argue against that from what I've just witnessed, which means sealed is going to be extra fun.
We could keep going on some of these, but I think the point has been made.
For some reason, despite all the power you mentioned, I want to name the card that my opponent's going to play against me on turn 2 every time, and it's going to really grind my gears. So it's 2 colorless, Zenith Chronicler. It's a 3/1. Whenever a player casts their first multicolored spell each turn, each other player draws a card. I just know I'm going to match up against someone, they're going to play this on turn 2, and my entire deck is going to be multicolor. It's just going to happen.
But looking at some of the multicolor cards, I don't think you're going to be worried.
The problem is they're going to be drawing those multicolored cards as well. Just seems like a card that's going to get under my skin.
This Staff of Compliation does seem terrible, though.
I was just looking at that, and unless there's like monumental amounts of life gain in this format, it just doesn't do that much.
Right, at all.
Yeah, so what we're looking at is 3 colorless artifact. Tap, pay 1 life, destroy target permanent you own. Strange, you know. Tap, pay 2 life, add 1 mana of any color. Okay, that gets, you know, old pretty fast. I'd rather have a mana rock. Tap, pay 3 life, proliferate. Tap, pay 4 life, draw a card, and then 5 untap staff. Seems like you can only get so much out of this before you're just killing yourself.
3 mana and 4 life to draw a card.
Yeah. But wait, 3 mana and 8 life over 2 turns to draw 2 cards. Step aside, divination.
But sir, you can pay 8 mana and 8 life in 1 turn to divination.
Good point.
I think this card's terrible.
This is atrocious. Because if you're gaining the life it takes to actually field this card to when it's going to be good, you're probably not losing that game anyway, because means you're gaining like 30 life on top of your starting 20.
And I'm sure you could do better than this.
Right. I mean, just from what we've seen, literally just throw a dart at the rare piles and you'll find something better.
Well, I think that covers our first look at this. So ready to move on to cool play of the week?
Sure.
We're going to go with the multiple hilarious miscues I've seen this week with Song of Frost and Fire.
Oh, no.
One example was my opponent played it and I had Disdainful Stroke up and I instinctively almost clicked it. I was like, wait, 1 minute. And I looked, and I'm like, I have 3 giants, and they have none.
What does Song of Frost and Fire do for those who are getting confused with Game of Thrones books?
4 damage to each non-giant creature.
Opponent, creature types matter.
So they just wipe their side, They did get one of my creatures. My one non-giant creature did go down for the team. Thanks, opponent.
Yikes.
You know what that brings us to? Chris's bad beat.
Yeah. It's just been kind of a frustrating run, and I think the collective bad beats are just how many times my opponents have top deck showdown of the scolds against me when they're hellbent. Felt like it's happened 3 times just from like the last few days.
Multiple times I've walked back to my desk just in time to see that happen to you.
Yeah, and for those who don't know what that card does, it's from Kaldheim. It basically is a saga, and the first chapter just says, casually, exile the top 4 cards of your library. Until the end of your next turn, you may play those cards. So it's just a solid 4-for-1. But wait!
There's more!
Chapters 2 and 3 are, whenever you cast a spell this turn, put a +1/+1 counter on target creature you control. So obviously, format all-star. Only 4 mana, so you can pretty reliably even cast something the first turn you play it. Sometimes you just want to hold all 4 spells that you inevitably flip over to put counters on things the next turn anyway.
It usually works itself out.
Yeah, yeah. One of my opponents did hit 4 lands off of it, and then they proceeded to just draw straight gas for the next 4 turns, so it still did very good things for them.
Nice.
Yeah, anyway, if you can draft that card, I highly recommend it.
Come check out our totally free Discord where you can get deck techs, pick advice, check out trophy decks, discuss limit, or, you know, just chill. You can find the Draft Lab on Twitch at J2SJosh, probably not, Floridamon Icky, Equal TV to Jordan and DeFore. Don't forget to check out mtgazone.com for awesome strategy articles by the Draft Lab. Well, that's 73 episodes in, and my parents have started to ask me if I'm still playing that kids card game.